Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of True Crime Boulevard. I'm your host, Bree. This week, we're going to be talking about Aaron Hernandez and the murder of Odin Lloyd. So, content trigger warning, this case involves gun violence, suicide, there's brief mentions of child abuse. So if any of these topics are hard for you, please take care of yourself and your mental health, and I'm sure you'll be able to join us in a future episode. A lot of the information that I got for this episode came from the Netflix documentary. I did try and look up some articles and stuff on this case, but a lot of the articles that I read, I feel like were just repeating, like almost verbatim, what the Netflix documentary was saying. So I just took most of my information from the Netflix documentary. So we're gonna hop right on into this case. Aaron Hernandez was born November 6, 1989 in Bristol, Connecticut. His parents were Dennis and Terry Hernandez. He also has an older brother, DJ Hernandez. His home was filled with a lot of domestic issues between his parents. There's a lot of child abuse towards him and his brother, mainly verbal and physical abuse. His dad was an alcoholic. He would beat the kids kind of regularly. His mom and Aaron's mom and dad would get into a lot of physical altercations. The cops were called, the whole nine. So he had a kind of rough upbringing. I mean, you know, abuse is abuse, and that's rough. He played a lot of sports. He was mainly following in his father's footsteps. His father played football. His brother played football. So he was definitely following, like, a legacy kind of situation here. And he had a very close relationship with his dad. As toxic and as abusive as it was, him and his father were very, very close. He loved his father. He kind of held his father on this pedestal. But in 2006, Dennis Hernandez died from complications of a hernia surgery. And after this, his relationship with, like, his mom and his family would just kind of deteriorate. He was still kind of close to his brother, but him and his mom, their relationship just completely deteriorated. He would end up essentially going to live with his cousin, Tanya Singleton. And their relationship would grow, and that would kind of become like his mother figure from then on out. By the time he was in high school, according to the Netflix documentary and like his friends and family that were talking about him in it, he was an all-star athlete. He could play just about any sport that he wanted to, but he shined the most at football. And when he was a sophomore in high school, he got an early scholarship to the University of Connecticut. That's where his brother played football. And he was set on going. His father played football there as well. And, you know, he was definitely set, like, on continuing the legacy, continuing the tradition. But after his father passed away, he made the decision to go play football at the University of Florida. While he was in high school, he also met his high school girlfriend and future fiance, Shayana Jenkins. He also began drinking and smoking excessively, partying excessively. But because of how he shined on the football field, you know, people just kind of overlooked it. The head coach of the University of Florida managed to convince Aaron Hernandez's principal that Aaron should be allowed to graduate a semester early, and he did just that. And he left Connecticut and moved to Florida in 2007 at the age of 17. This is kind of where his life really starts to spiral out of control. He was able to get away with just about anything, and this is what leads to a lot of his legal problems that started at the University of Florida. April 28th, 2007, he gets into a bar fight with the owner of a bar where him and some of the other players on the team, one of those other players being Tim Tebow, decided to go hang out one night. He shouldn't have even been in that club because he was too young. He was under the age of 21. Again, this is 2007. He is 17. And he goes to this bar and he rings up this crazy tab. And of course, the owner's like confronting him, like, hey, bro, you need to pay your tab. And he's like, no. And he like sucker punches the bar owner, and the bar owner never confronts him, never does anything, no charges were pressed, and everything just kind of got swept under the rug. Not long after that, September 30th, 2007, there was a double shooting in Gainesville, Florida, where Aaron was living at the time, and one of the victims of the shooting identified him as a possible shooter. Now, this was because they saw him in the club, there was a verbal confrontation, and they just kind of assumed that it was him, but no one was ever able to prove it, so that was kind of that. It does get brought up later, but not in the sense of like he did it, but just as like he has a history of like being this violent person. So again, he just started having a lot of legal problems in Florida. From 2007 till 2010, he was getting in and out of trouble. He was, again, partying excessively, drinking excessively, smoking excessively, and like it was just a lot going on. And with all of that and all his personal demons really starting to like take a hold of him, the University of Florida, his football coach, tells him, yeah, you're not welcome back on the team after this season. So after his junior year, his coach is like, you cannot come back. So at that point, he decides to leave college at the end of his junior year. And his senior year of college, instead of staying, he decides he's gonna go to the draft and try and go pro. Many NFL teams looked at him, but they also did a lot of private research. They were looking into like what kind of a person he was, his character levels and all these things. And he was scoring kind of low. There's like these tests they give football players, I guess, to like test your character and how you are and like what you do. And like, I don't know. Don't ask me about these tests. These tests don't make any sense to me. But basically his character on the character test, he scored really, really low, like the lowest you possibly could, which made a lot of teams be like, you know, we're not about to take him. We don't want him on our team. So he didn't get picked by them. And he went from thinking that he was going to be a first round draft pick to being a fourth round draft pick. He was picked by the New England Patriots, which made him happy because he would be closer to home. They're in Massachusetts and he's from Connecticut. That's not really all that far. And he was drafted in 2010 to play for the New England Patriots. And a lot of his family was happy and a lot of his friends and family were not happy. A lot of them wanted him to get far away from Connecticut, get away from the things he was doing in high school, the bad crowds that he was running with. But he went to New England and that's just kind of murder, she wrote. However, from 2010 to 2011, his first year, he was really kind of doing okay. He really wasn't getting into too much shit. He really wasn't getting into too much trouble. They won the Super Bowl in 2011. I believe he scored four touchdowns in that game. So, you know, he was kind of living a high life. Like, he was focused. He was on a good path. But by February of 2012, things were starting to change for him. He got engaged. He had a baby. They bought him and his fiance bought this huge house in North Attleboro, and he was living like this stereotypical lifestyle. And he was also still doing his own thing. He was still drinking. He was still partying. He was still running with the wrong crowds. And by July of 2012, things had really started to culminate and things had gotten really big. Things had started to go really downhill really fast. There was a double shooting in Boston of Daniel Jorge Corsia de Abreu, 29, and Safiero Furtado, 28. They were both immigrants from Cape Verde and they had moved to Boston. They were killed in a shooting. They got shot while sitting in their car. Now, witnesses say that they saw Aaron's car pull up to the side and they heard racial epithets being yelled out of a window, and then they just heard five shots come out of the car window that ended up killing De Abreu and Furtado. When the police went to go investigate that, they found footage of the club that De Abreu and Furtado were in the night of the shooting that they were in, and Aaron is there. And they were just like, oh, it's a coincidence. But Aaron in the community had been known for, you know, carrying guns and being a little bit of a wild one and, you know, hanging out with the wrong crew. So while the cops were like, oh, it was a coincidence, other people were like, but was it? So that happened in July of 2012. And by February of 2013, he had gotten into another shooting altercation with his friend at the time, Alexander Bradley. Now, that is a whole nother case in itself. That's like a whole nother episode I could do. Because there was a lot. There was a lot of lying. There was a lot of games. It was, at first, Alexander Bradley wanted retaliation because Alexander Bradley got shot in the face. And so he wanted to retaliate. He lost his sight in one of his eyes. Like, he wanted hell. He wanted somebody head for that. And he told Aaron, like, I'm coming for your neck, bro. Like, I'm coming for you. And there was a whole lot of issues there. There was a court case and all this stuff. And eventually got down to the point where it was like, you couldn't really do anything in trial. Because if Alexander said too much, he would be committing perjury and lying, like he was lying in previous statements, and it was a lot. Everybody was gonna go to jail. So the case eventually just got dropped and it got settled. I don't know what that means. Nobody really knows what that means. So February 13th, that shooting happens, and that kind of leads up to what the case that brought us here today. So Aaron Hernandez, again, is engaged to Shayana Jenkins. Shayana Jenkins has a sister named Shania Jenkins. Shania is dating Odin Lloyd. This is how Odin and Aaron meet, because the two men respectively are dating two sisters. So they started hanging around each other a lot. They got to know each other. But with Aaron's continued abuse of drugs and alcohol, he was getting more paranoid. And there's another thing that I will bring up later that I think really plays more of a part in his paranoia and the way that he was acting and the things that he was doing. But definitely, I think the weed and the alcohol didn't help. If you're already paranoid and you smoke weed, it's only going to make you more paranoid. And if you're drinking on top of that, you know, the uppers and the downers, they just don't do well together. Everybody can't do that, especially not like that. So Aaron was one of those people that was just testing fate. So on July 16th, like early in the day, Aaron and Odin have a conversation about some marijuana. I'm going to make the assumption, I'm not sure because nobody is really sure of what actually happened, but this is what people believe kind of was like the preface to the murder that takes place on June 17th. But June 16th, there's a conversation or some kind of exchange between Aaron and Odin about some weed. I'm going to make the assumption that Aaron was trying to buy weed. Maybe not from Odin, but maybe from someone Odin knew. Because Odin did grow up in the hood. He grew up around, you know, hood niggas. That's just really all I got to say about that. Gangs, all that bullshit. But he was not one of those people. But he knew those people. So that's why I'm like, I think Aaron was trying to talk to Odin about talking to somebody else, trying to get some weed or whatever. And I'm going to make the, and this is where my assumption comes in, I'm going to make the assumption that whatever Aaron got and whatever he paid didn't match up. However that is, either he paid, I'm assuming he paid too much for too little. Like, that would be the only thing that I think would make a pothead mad. So there was an altercation about that between Aaron and Odin, as if Aaron, I guess, thought he was getting played. I don't know. It was a lot. But June 16th, that evening, so this happened in the early day, like kind of like in like the morning-ish, like 10 hours earlier. So this conversation we're talking about now is June 16th, 2013, about 9 p.m. Aaron texts Odin. This is after their altercation earlier that day. So probably around like 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, that altercation happened. And then like 9 o'clock at night, Aaron texts Odin and was like, "Ayo, come chill with me." So he was gonna come to Odin's house, scoop him up. But he also texted his friend Carlos Ortiz and Ernest Wallace to come with him to go pick up Odin. Now here's my problem with that. Aaron Hernandez lives in North Attleboro, Massachusetts, and drives to Bristol, Connecticut to pick up Carlos and Ernest, and then turns around and drives to Boston to pick up Odin. By the time he gets to Odin's house in Boston, it's like 2:30 in the morning. I would have never got in the car. You got me fucked up. If you ever text me at 9 p.m. and then don't show up at my house until after midnight, bitch, you're not coming in. I'm not coming out. Just know that. So he gets in the car and it appears that he may have been concerned because he texts his sister letting her know like who he's with. He's with the NFL. He's with Aaron Hernandez. He says NFL in the text message, but just, you know, I'm with Aaron, just so you know. And they were supposed to be on their way back to Aaron's house, but instead he was taken to a secluded area in North Attleboro, Massachusetts at around 3:25 a.m. They went to this isolated, secluded area that was kind of like fenced in, and on the fence pole there is a security camera that caught a glimpse of Aaron Hernandez, or what, well, we know that it is now, Aaron Hernandez's car driving into this secluded area. There is six shots that rang out. One of the bullets hit Odin in his forearm. One hit Odin in his right flank, which is like your lower back, like love handle, I believe. And then two shots went directly into his back as if he was like crouching down on the ground, maybe like trying to hold that spot or whatever. And then two shots to his chest. He died that night at 27 years old. He died June 17th, 2013 at about 3:25 a.m. Now, there's video footage of Aaron driving in at about 3:25, and then there's video footage of him leaving approximately 4 minutes later. So this shooting only took about 4 minutes to happen, which, like, dude, what the fuck? Why? Why was this necessary? But there's video footage of what appears to be his car coming out. Sorry, I meant to say this. It's not even his car. It's a fucking rental car. Like, he's stupid. Why would you drive a rental car? You gotta turn the bitch back in. But it was a rental car, and he leaves at around like 3:29, 3:30, and then he pulls up at his house by like 3:35. Because his house was like a mile away from where the shooting happened. So fast forward about an hour and a half, 5 a.m., a man is jogging, he's minding his business. He uses this secluded industrial area as a cut through to get from point A to point B, and when he cuts through, he finds Odin Lloyd's body. So he calls the police. They come. They identify Odin Lloyd. They go through his pockets, the whole nine. They they look at the scene. They do the whole thing. And that's where they find a extra pair of the rental keys to the car that Aaron Hernandez had in Odin's pocket, which immediately just kind of ties Aaron Hernandez right to this case. So he was suspect numero uno. The following day, June 18th, 2013, he was suspect number one. 8 days later, on June 26th, 2013, Aaron was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. The same day, the New England Patriots dropped that ass. They said, oh, no, not doing it. No, thank you. And then between June 27th and June 28th, both Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz were both arrested in connection to the murder of Odin Lloyd. And while they were searching Aaron's cousin, Tanya Singleton, the woman that I was talking about earlier that became like his mother figure, they ended up searching her house. I am still not 100% sure of how they got to searching her house. I believe one of his friends lived at that house. So they end up searching her house. And while they're searching the house, they find a Toyota 4Runner that is connected to a double shooting murder in 2012. While they're searching the house for the murder of Odin Lloyd to see if they can find any evidence, they find evidence for a 2012 double shooting. So, like I said, Aaron was arrested June 26, 2013. He was officially indicted August 22nd, 2013 on charges of first degree murder. September 6, 2013, he is arraigned and he pleads not guilty to murder. From June 26th of 2013 until the end of this, he's in jail. They locked him up and threw away the key. The trial itself takes about 2 years because there was so much evidence they had to go through. There were so many witnesses that they had come up and speak on behalf of Aaron, on behalf of Odin. there's just a lot of stuff that they had to go through. They really go into like deep depth in the Netflix documentary. But April 15th, 2015, Aaron Hernandez is convicted of the first degree murder of Odin Lloyd and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In 2014, while this case is happening, Aaron gets indicted for that 2012 double shooting murder of Dea Brew and Furtado. So he's going through both of these cases at the same time. Now, the double shooting murder was kind of put on hold until the Odin Lloyd case was closed. And once it was closed, April 15th of 2015, they definitely went forward with the case against him for the double shooting. But I want to talk about Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz, because I'm not going to lie, they kind of got off easy. But we don't know if they actually did anything. And it's believed that they were just there. They didn't actually shoot anybody. They didn't actually do anything. They were just there. So they were both initially charged with first degree murder. Wallace went to trial and he was found not guilty of first degree murder. He got acquitted of first degree murder. However, he was charged with accessory after the fact and was sentenced to 4 to 7.5 years in prison. And then Ortiz saw what happened to Wallace and decided, I'm not going to the court, I'm gonna just take a plea deal. And he got the exact same plea, he took the exact same charges. They both served 4 to 7.5 years. This was in 2016, so the earliest they could have got out was 2020, which I would not be shocked, but I also can't find if they did or did not get out. I'm not 100% sure. So they could have, the earliest they could have gotten out was 2020, which would not be shocking, especially with COVID, but the latest they could get out would be next year. So there's that. His cousin Tanya was also sent to jail for accessory, but she got released. She was only in jail for a small period of time. In the Netflix documentary, you can hear a lot of Aaron Fernandez's phone call conversations with his mom, with Tanya, with his fiance, with some of his friends. And he specifically has a very long conversation with Tanya, well, not very long, but long for prison conversations with Tanya about just how sad he was knowing that she was in jail. She was sick, she had cancer, and knowing that like her treatments weren't getting done and she wasn't being, you know, getting all her medications and being well taken care of. And he was just very concerned for her. And, you know, he just continued to tell her just how much he loved her and, you know, cared about her. Whereas if you listen to the conversations with him and his mom, it almost sounds like he hates her. Like he's so angry with her. So that was something that I just happened to notice, that like with Tanya, he was like, you know, very almost like sorry that she had to even go through all of that, like that he was the reason she went through that. And he was just like, I hope you don't hate me. And she's like, I can never hate you. And he was like, I know, but like I get worried sometimes. And you can see that there's like genuine like feeling and remorse and guilt and like feeling bad for the thing that he did, because like he put her in this position. His fiance was also charged with accessory because she got rid of a gun, but there was no way to prove if she knew prior to the shooting of Odin if that was the gun or whatever. So the charges eventually got dropped from her, so she didn't have to go to trial or anything. Now again, this case took about 2 years, which in like the long scheme of things is relatively short for a case like this. Like it wasn't like long, but it wasn't like super fast. But I think part of it was probably because he was in the NFL and they were trying to get this case, you know, solved and closed and whatever. But there was a whole bunch of stuff that just kept coming up. So he does end up going to trial for the 2012 double shooting murder in Boston. He is indicted for that double murder. The trial started March 1st, 2017, almost 2 years after he was sentenced and charged with the murder of Odin Lloyd. But April 14th, 2017, he was acquitted for the double murder of Dea Brew and Furtado. There just really wasn't enough evidence to prove that, like, he was the shooter. He was in the car, but, like, did he actually do the shooting? Nobody was able to really prove it. And then 5 days later, April 19th, 2007, and 2017, after he had been cleared and acquitted of the double murder case, he was found dead in his prison cell by correctional officers after hanging himself, or apparently hanging himself, with a bedsheet. And then in May 9th of 2017, his murder conviction was vacated due to the ab initio legal principle clause, whatever it's called. That whole legal principle is confusing as hell to me, and I don't even think it exists anymore. So if you want to go look it up, have fun. But in 2019, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Courts reinstated his conviction. So I'm going to kind of explain what the ab initio is. Essentially, it's saying you can't charge a dead man. That's basically what it's saying. However, I feel, and I think the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts also felt, but you can charge a dead man who's already been charged with a crime that he was trying to, like, acquit himself for. Like, he had went and was like, oh, I didn't do this. Like, he wanted to get his case, you know, acquitted and retried, but he killed himself. And so people were like, oh, well, the conviction should be vacated. And the courts were like, no, he was already charged with it, so he will still be charged with it. And there are a couple other people in Massachusetts where the same thing happened, where they were initially charged with a crime and then they died and it got vacated and then they were recharged. Again, the ab initio thing confuses me. But again, I think Massachusetts ended up, like, repealing that whole process. You can't even do that in Massachusetts anymore. Now, so some of his motives behind this. Now, there's one motive that I really didn't talk about because I don't know. And I don't like talking about this because I feel like if it's not public knowledge, then I don't have a place to say anything. I don't know. His sexuality. There's a lot of conversation in the documentary about if he was or was not gay. Nobody knows. So, saying that he was mad at Odin for knowing that he was gay, how do you know that? Aaron nor Odin can confirm or deny that statement. So, I'm going with the drugs and marijuana. Depending on what state you are in, that is a drug. So, I'm going with the marijuana. I'm going with that was the issue because, I mean, yeah, he definitely could have been paranoid about somebody knowing that he was gay. However, nobody knew that he was gay other than, like, four people. And I, not to say that they're lying, they could definitely be telling the truth. That's not what I'm saying. They could be telling the truth. I'm saying, I don't know. And I think this had more to do with something else. I don't think his sexuality played as big of a part as people are making it seem. Could he definitely been trying to hide his sexuality and have this, like, hyper masculine, you know, personality and all this stuff, especially because, like, his dad and who his dad was? Sure, that's definitely a possibility. I'm just not going to lean into it because there's a confirm or deny aspect of it, which I can't do. So I'm not going to put my two cents in on that because sexuality is a very fluid thing. And being a part of the rainbow community, that's one thing that everybody's sexuality is their business. And I'm not going to pick on somebody in their sexuality and try and break them to pieces to figure out if they are and aren't gay. That's your business. But one thing I do know, and everybody knows because doctors have done this, is Aaron Hernandez had CTE. After he died, he was diagnosed with CTE. You can only ever be diagnosed with CTE in an autopsy after you died. CTE is chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Now, if you've listened to any of my previous episodes, specifically the one of Chris Benoit, you would know that it's the same thing that he also had when he went on his little killing spree. And, you know, many people believe that CTE is what caused Chris Benoit to do the same thing, to do the things that he did. As me personally, I think CTE had more to do with what was going on with Aaron. So yeah, I'm gonna kind of briefly explain what CT is, because I really didn't do that in the Chris Benoit episode, so I am going to kind of break that down a little bit here. CTE, again, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is also known as boxer's madness or punch drunk syndrome. It's mainly contributed to high contact sports like boxing, MMA, martial arts, kickboxing, any of that, hint the boxer's madness, punch drunk syndrome. But it's also contributed to like football, wrestling, rugby, basketball, sports like that, sports that really do have a high contact. People get concussions a lot and easily. The main thing with CTE is chronic trauma, consistent trauma, constantly getting concussions, getting hit in the head. So for Chris Benoit, it was the wrestling, it was the flying headbutts, it was taking the chair shots. For Aaron Hernandez, it's football. It's your head falling first into the ground, or you know, going to tackle somebody and you smack your helmet into their chest plate or whatever the fuck that shit is called. I don't know. But like, constantly hitting your head. And if you actually watch a lot of his old football clips, and actually, like, you can see a lot of like, oh shit, that was probably a concussion. Lord knows how many football players probably actually have this, because they take a lot of trauma and hits to the head. So Aaron dealt with that a lot. Aaron was diagnosed with stage 4 CTE, so I'm gonna explain the stages a little bit. So the first stage is confusion, disorientation, dizziness, and headaches. The second stage is memory loss, impulsive behavior, and social instability. Now, if you think about Aaron Hernandez, we don't hear much about memory loss, but we do hear a lot about impulsive behavior. He's a very impulsive guy. He does things just off the whim, like, oh, I don't have to listen to anybody, I can do whatever I want. Like, he's a very impulsive guy. His social instability, that's another thing that rings true with him. So I definitely think there were signs of this prior to. Stages 3 and 4 are hypomemia, dementia, sensory processing disorder, speech impediment, depression, and suicidality. Now, a couple of these things I hear and I go, am I okay? I'm fine. I have a sensory processing disorder, so I hear that. Whenever I see stuff that I have, I'm just like, what the fuck, bro? But when you put all this together, and somebody who has a lot of like brain issues, you can see how this would affect them in a completely different way. So by the time he was in prison, you know, he definitely was dealing with depression and obviously some kind of suicidal ideation, whatever. Because he eventually does commit suicide. Again, this can only be diagnosed in an autopsy. This wasn't something that people could have found out while he was in prison, like just from like talking to him. And many people said that like when they would talk to him on the phone, like some days he was, you know, he sounded like himself, and then other days he sounded really depressed. And then there were days where like people, like lawyers and psychologists and psychiatrists and all this stuff, people would go in and talk to him and they were like, yeah, no, like some days like he just wasn't present. Like he was like lost and his memory was starting to go and all this stuff. And they were saying this stuff about him in like private conversation. Like obviously they can't tell details of what was said, but they can tell you about his general disposition in those conversations and how they were definitely left and right from each other. So once they were able to look at his brain and look at the trauma of his brain, they were able to see, like, again, he had stage 4 trauma. And I will put pictures on Instagram for you of his brain. Like, there are actual pictures out there of what Aaron Hernandez's brain looked like and what a regular brain looks like. And you can see where all, like, the calcium buildup is in his brain. That's essentially, like, where his brain died. And it's, like, these hard parts in his brain, and you can see all of that in the imaging that they did of his brain. Here's the thing about sports that like I try not to talk about, because I was a jock, I love sports, I played basketball my whole life. Sports are hard on the body. I think most people know that, especially if you played a sport. But there's not a lot of talk about the fact that so many players get hurt, so many players get concussions, so many players tear this and rotate that and do all kinds of different things. And we really don't take great care of our bodies. I think we're getting better at it now because there's so much more information now. But for a long time, a lot of players weren't taking care of their body. Like, part of the reason why I was just like, I'm done with basketball and I don't want to play anymore, because I didn't take care of my body. And I literally destroyed my ankles, okay? They're gone. So that was like a sad, that's just like, for me, that was just a side effect of playing basketball. Many basketball players talk about how they got bad knees and bad ankles. I got bad knees and bad ankles. Like, that's just a side effect of playing ball. But that didn't have to be a side effect. But I also didn't push to get better. I just pushed to be in the game. I was always good enough or healthy enough to play the game, because that's what it is to be a jock. You play the game. You don't stop. If you get hurt on the floor, you get the fuck up and you keep going. You know what I'm saying? Brush that shit off, keep playing. I don't know how many times I got up, went in the hallway, stretched, did some hops or whatever, said I was fine, and went back in a basketball game knowing damn well I should have sat down, because by the time I got home, I literally could not walk, and I would take a step and just fall because my ankle could not bear the weight. But the adrenaline running through your body makes you think you can keep going. So when you're getting knocked to the ground playing football and you smack your head into the floor, you get up, shake it off, and keep moving, you're not thinking about the fact that, like, yo, I probably just took a mad hit to the dome, bro. And your coach is like, get up, brush it off, you got this, go, 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 go. So you get back on the floor, you get back in the field, you play the game. So I definitely think, especially in these, you know, 1900s, early 2000s, like, football players were not able to take care of their body. A lot of football players committed suicide, and with time, they have been able to get, like, the football players that have committed suicide, they have gotten to x-ray their brains and look at their brains and see, like, yo, a lot of these motherfuckers got CTE, yo. Like, a lot of these dudes got issues. I know a lot of people talk about CTE, and, you know, it's a football, you know, it's a boxer's disease or whatever. Like, if I'm not mistaken, like, I believe Muhammad Ali even possibly had it, 'cause, like, he had dementia and a lot of issues, and I think, like, that was one of the things that, like, you could kind of tie to CTE. I don't know if his brain was ever officially, like, looked at or whatever, because I do know that he had dementia, but I always have questioned, like, could it have been to CTE? Because he took a lot of, you know, shots to the brain, and again, this is what initially was called, like, a boxer's issue, you know, boxers, shit, what was it called? I just completely lost the name of that shit. Boxer's madness, or punch drunk syndrome. So, you know, those are things you think about when you think about professional athletes who have, like, severe dementia later on in life. It's like, yo, what happened? And you hear about shit like this and you go, damn, how many of these people had that shit? So, with all that saying, by the time he was 27 years old, his brain was so beat up and destroyed and just so badly concussed that he has stage 3 to stage 4 CTE. I mean, he had a, you know, I feel like he had a shitty shot in life. He had a shitty shot. He started getting concussions young. There's only 2 that's documented. But when you go back and look at his footage playing in pro ball, football, there's even clips from him playing in high school where, like, he's taking some crazy hits. So who knows when this shit started, you know what I'm saying? And then on top of that, he's drinking and the weed and all that shit. Like, drinking at a young age, your brain isn't fully developed. Smoking at a really young age, again, your brain's not fully developed, and you taking concussions, bro, your brain never gets the chance to develop. So by the time you're 27, your brain is like 85. You get what I'm saying? So that's my little 2 cents on what I think was the reason why Aaron did this. But I think at the end of the day, it was probably just a little bit of everything. You know what I'm saying? You think of, maybe it was his sexuality. Maybe it was the CTE. Maybe it was the drugs and alcohol. Maybe he was doing more than just smoking weed. We don't know. There was a whole lot of shit that I think played into this. But the signs and symptoms were there. But they were so easily overlooked because of who he was. They were easily tied to other things. You know what I'm saying? You could say he's paranoid because of one thing or another thing or something else. Like, all of these signs and symptoms were overlooked by a lot of the people that were close to him, be it because they didn't want to see it because he was a moneymaker, or he was hiding it from people that probably would have called him out on it. And so he ended up where he was, and he ended up murdering Odin Lloyd, and at the end of the day, killing himself. So yeah. those are my thoughts, and this is the case of Aaron Hernandez and the murder of Odin Lloyd. I want to thank you guys again for joining me on this episode. This was a crazy journey. I feel like it was all over the place, but I'm glad we got through it. Please let me know what you think about this episode, what your opinions are on this case. Go watch the documentary on Netflix, please. If y'all don't ever listen to me about shit else, go watch this documentary. It is fucking good. Every episode is crazy. Like, it just gets more and more and more and more and more and more in depth. It's definitely worth the watch. So yeah, if you would like to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram at True Crime Boulevard, or you can email me at truecrimeboulevard@gmail.com. They're both spelled the same. It's TRUECRIMEBLVD. Again, that's True Crime Boulevard, TRUECRIMEBLVD. You can email me if you just want to send me any suggestions for cases, if you just want to talk, say what's up. Say, yo, what the fuck was you talking about? That shit was all over the place. Whatever. Just hit me up. Thank you so much for joining me. And until next time, this is your girl, Bree. And I will be back next week. Bye.